one presentation from Treasury from the Board of the Special Pension, and then also we were supposed to engage with the Department of Defense. Deputy Minister, maybe you can introduce your team so that we can be able to know who is here and whether the Special Pension Board is able to. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. Also to again start with the apology. I'm not too sure whether communication has reached the relevant offices correctly with regard to the presentation of the board. Under the impression that it would be part of the department and the special pension administration. So the board
very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. Chairperson, I want to raise a concern about the attendance of the meeting. I can only see one ruling party member and opposition party member besides the two of you there. I'm talking about members. Now, I don't know, is this meeting not important or what? I'm also having other meetings that I must go to. Now, I really don't know. I must go to a finance meeting at the same time now. Can you please comment on this thing? Because I am really very much concerned about this.
Thank you, Honorable Diego. Yeah, Honorable Bloom, I think members would be made. I'm not sure, but members inform them.
After the briefing, I will also excuse myself to go to the other meeting of finance. Would you allow me to do that?
Thank you, Honorable. The only apology that we have is from Honorable Mulambo and Honorable Kane. So these are the only two apologies that we have. As far as we know, the other members of the Deputy Minister.
Thank you. Directed earlier that I do the introduction and the presentation. I'm also going to do the introduction and the presentation. One of the members will recall that we did appear before the committee the time last year and briefed the committee on the progress that we have made so far. We have received invitation again to appear before the committee. We all know that special pensions is implemented in terms of the Special Pensions Act, which was first passed in 1996, which gave effect to Section 189 of the Constitution, and I do not want to bore this meeting with going back to the Constitution. One of the reasons why we don't make progress on this program is because we always go back to the background of the day. But the main objective in summary was to provide for the payment of special pensions to persons who have sacrificed for service, public interest in the establishment of our new constitution. In 1998, this legislation was amended in order to accommodate for applicants to receive monthly pension from the age of 35, as opposed to age 50, female and 60 age. In 2003, Parliament also amended this legislation to accommodate late applications, because even though there was a window of applications during the period, a number of people certainly know about legislation, some didn't apply in time, so there was a special arrangement or a special amendment that allowed for late application. That was received after the 1st of December 1997, because the closing date was announced in November 1997. And then 2005, again, this legislation was amended in order to accommodate new benefits, namely the monthly pension for spouses, the monthly pension for orphans, and also reduced the period of benefits, and put the 31st of December 2006 as the closing date for all the money. 2008, the amendments were again introduced to extend the right to a pension to persons that were 30 years of age but not yet 35 years. As we know that the other one has gone from there to 35, but this exception that was called the under 35, people who were under the age of 35 for 1996. And then also to extend the surviving spouse will offer pensions and similar benefits to other categories that have accommodated in the association. But also to introduce the regulation of the administration of the pension and the structures that we have to study. And also amended Chapter 3 of the Acts to provide for matters that this is just a paragraph from the author of the text. Chairperson, and honorable members, I would want the officials to end their salary by proceeding with the presentation from the officials. Going on into the actual update of where we are, as you said, with regard to the implementation of the policy. One thing, Chairperson, I would want to say that we get into the presentation charge now, because as we would know that special pensions by its very nature is a very special pension, unlike all other pensions. We fully understand the sentiments attached to this, and from where we come from, we all have the certainty that people who strongly feel should be accommodated to the special pension for the reasons that are in the legislation, and as the name says, this is special pension. Just to acknowledge that our government, in giving effect to Section 189 of the Constitution, implemented a number of other initiatives other than special pensions. So special pensions is like one of those interventions that our government instituted. We therefore cannot expect special pensions to resolve all our social inequities that are represented by the past. But we stand ready as this department, and I would imagine the Department of Defense and other departments, to see how that can accommodate other shortcomings that otherwise are not accommodated. I feel that the members of the committee assist us in many ways to leverage what we do outside of the committee. We've made progress, as we will hear from the presentation with regards to the implementation of the social pension, and where there is a need for further amendments. Please, with regards to the social pension, we will take the view from the and also that if there are issues, members, because we will receive letters from members, we will also know that members of their constituencies, in their convention, they also do receive some. That our door is always open for people to submit such so that we also can access the job. After this session, the members will avail themselves to such again. But the request is also that when those are submitted to the official, that my office is also favorable to this effort so that we can access the students for the official.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by saying this presentation was prepared as a response to the invitation that we have received. So we did not want to be all over the show because this program has really touched many areas. Therefore, we limited the presentation to address questions that were raised in the invitation to us. With that in mind, I think I must have a logical sequence of events since I had the chairperson asking where is the special pensions board. So I'm going to request members to go straight to slide number 10. So that we deal with the operations first, and then we can go into the benefits and the challenges we face. So let us just understand how special pensions run. As alluded earlier by the Deputy Minister, the initial Act of 1996 established a special pensions board as well as a special pensions review board. The special pensions board was basically the administration. It was people who were sitting at the office on a daily basis, receiving applications, doing the research, verifying, following all internal processes, interaction with political parties to confirm what has been put in the application, up to a point of award. That was the purpose of the special pensions board. And then obviously, if applicants were declined, they had an opportunity to take their case to the next level for review. So they would take the case to a review board, and the review board's decision was final. So, as we speak today, and this is just for background, so that as we speak, we don't confuse the names of the board. As we speak today, the special pensions board, as well as the special pensions review board, have been subsequently abolished. So, we should not even be mentioning that currently, unless we're referring to we have replaced the board itself with the administration, and that is the unit that is headed by Mr. Jonathan. So we have removed the element of politicizing the application to make it a purely administrative event. However, in the place of the review board, the Act established an appeal board. So currently we will only have the administration that is covered in this team, and then if you are not satisfied with the process, you have to go to the appeal board that is constituted by independent people. It's one chairperson, two standing members, and a third member, a replacement member, so that we don't delay the process in case one of the members cannot make it. So that is how it is constituted currently. And I hope, Chairperson, you were referring to the appeal court. But we haven't seen that invitation. That's the MS I needed. We will attempt to answer because they report to us, and where we can, we will ask them to provide answers. So that is just a overview of the court. And I hope from now on what we will be speaking the same terminology so that we don't confuse each other.
So the board and the appeal board and the review board have been abolished.
The board and the review have been abolished. Now we have the appeal. And I already touched on the issue of the appeal and its composition and its activity. Now let's talk about the structure itself. What we do on a daily basis. On a daily basis, as I have read it previously, you will have Kabelo as overseeing the unit with the assistance of Mgevisa that side. And then internally you have this unit, because this was also asked in the invitation, probably to see whether we are not duplicating efforts with other institutions that provide similar benefits. We have a political verification and research unit, the adjudication panel that would go through after the application has been verified and researched. Then you'll have an appeal panel. Again, this should not confuse us with the appeal board. Maybe we must change the names going forward. The appeal panel is ordinary employees who have applied for the job, they come on a daily basis, they are employees, not to be confused with the appeal board. And then obviously, after everything has been formalized, we need to make good, we must pay benefits to people in their own right, to the secondary benefits. So it makes sense that we must have a payment structure, and then try and care and record, so that when we get queries, members claiming that the application that they, we have records to go back and say, and come with an informed and authentic answers to the, our political head and as well as the parliament. reasons for that. As you will see from the numbers, the challenges we are faced with. If you receive X number of applications, 60% of it is declined, and there is a serious challenge there. These are people are not providing authentic information or not truthful, or they are missing gaps there and there. This is the challenge that we're grappling with on a day-to-day basis. And you'll see the statistics as Mr. Jonathan takes us through that. I know he's very passionate about clarifying who qualifies, who doesn't qualify, and I want him to say it in his own ways with the passion that he demonstrates in his daily operations dealing with this question. I'm going to hand over to Gabriel to start with the beneficiaries, the statistics, and then we'll hand over to the deputy.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, Chair. And good morning, honorable members. Beneficiaries of special pension, like Mr. Ngomizulu has indicated, the presentation is customized based on the invitation and questions raised. A beneficiary is a person who has met all the special requirements in terms of Special Pensions Act and nothing else. The Act recognized the following beneficiaries. A person applying in his own right. This would be a person who is a South African citizen or entitled to be a South African citizen by virtue of birth or marriage or anything, who was engaged in full-time political service in the liberation struggle before 2nd February 1990. And then the spouse of the deceased pensioner would be the person that I would refer to applying in his own right, or her own right. Thanks, dear. A child of the deceased pensioner or a spouse that was receiving monthly benefit. As you can see, it says child of the deceased pensioner or spouse. In sequence, we where there are children, you will focus first on the spouse. If there is no surviving spouse, then the benefit would move to the children. If the surviving spouse, we will pay the benefits to the surviving spouse. Dependent of the deceased pensioner or spouse, you will notice the child is also a dependent. A spouse is also a dependent to the pensioner. But the Act defines dependent. A child or a dependent may be a parent or a sibling, niece, nephew, adopted child in respect of whom a deceased person was legally liable for maintenance, and if the applicant, which is a dependent, was at the time of death of the deceased dependent on the deceased for maintenance. That's the definition of dependent in terms of the Special Pensions Act. Then a child or a dependent who became an orphan as a result of the death of a pensioner and or a spouse. Those are the only beneficiaries recognized by the Special Pension Act. Now we're moving to here. We depicted just to demonstrate these are the monthly recipients of special pension, the annuitant, as at end of 31 October 2012. I've also categorized it so that honorable members can see in terms of the age how many in our membership role we have. Between 30 to 45 years of age, we've got those are the numbers 1137, and then 30 to 49, then between 50 to 64 is 4968, 65 years and above 331, orphans 58, then widows 1260. So currently the total recipient, which is people that we pay on a monthly basis, it's 7754. The number could have been more, but there are pensioners who have not responded or submitted their life certificates. Life certificate, what happens annually, the administration would send a pensioner a life certificate so that you can confirm that you're still alive by signing. But we have since moved or automated such a requirement through interfacing with Home Affairs so that we can verify with Home Affairs, and then we're no longer sending those. However, those pensioners that did not return their life certificate, they still fall outside this category. So we are still tracing them so that they can be part of the auto life verification through Home Affairs. Since inception, Special Pension has received a total number of applications of 72,810. Now, of the 72,810, total applications approved is 22,307. The total applications declined is 37,780. Total late applications, 9,438. And on the late applications, honorable members, it covers both the previous group, which is the over 35, and then the under 35. It's a combination of both. And then dormant application is 1364. Dormant application is basically people that have applied and submitted incomplete applications. The administration has tried offers to trace them, telephonic contact, physical visit, and then we send final letter of demand for them to respond. The application may be at times it's incomplete in terms of no biography, which means we cannot take the application forward, because if we take it forward, it will end up being disapproved. Then the administration developed a policy called the dormant policy, whereby the particular application will be removed from the backlog. Those applications 1, 3, 2, 4, by its own nature, they are still in the process. If that particular person resurfaces and say, I've since applied, then all we do, we show them, but we've sent you the letters and everything to the last address provided. And then if you submit all outstanding information, we activate the application and take it through the process. Those applications are not closed permanently. Then application in process in various stages, 1,961. Various stages here, we have applications that were received by the secondary benefit unit, which means spouses, children and orphans, or spouses that have applied on behalf of the deceased pensioner or orphans. And then we also have applications waiting for final signature at adjudication level. And we also have applications at appeal level. They all fall under that 1961. You notice that our total application approved is 22,307. But if you go back, you'll notice that the monthly recipient is 7754, and that might be raising a lot of concern. But most of the special pension beneficiaries that benefited from special pension, when they opted for NSF, their special pension were suspended. And then again, due to the age restriction before the 2008 amendment for the 30 to 34, most of the under 35, they opted to apply for NSF, because there was no age restriction there. This is why NSF has most of our beneficiaries. They were plus minus 23,000 that have benefited under the NSF program. On this particular slide, I've separated and I would like to give honorable members a demonstration of the under 35 since we started in January 2009. The numbers here are all included in that previous slide that gives a total picture. The total number of applications received from January 2009 until 31 December is 9,924. then the total number of applications processed is 9,874. Within the 9,874, there were people that were below the age of 30, and then people that were over the age of 35 that should have applied before 31 December 2006, who did not meet the deadline. When this window period of the 30 to 34 was introduced, they also applied. So those applications were rejected, 3,440. Currently, we've got incomplete applications at verification level. It's about 41. Last time when we came to present, we were sitting at, I think it was 2,300 applications. Last time when we came to present last year, we were sitting at 2,300 applications. Currently, we're sitting at 41, which means we have reduced the backlog at verification substantially. It was 2,361 to be exact. Thank you, Jim. Yes. This particular is an internal process. As to the request by the invitation that I've decided to include it just to indicate how study was indicating that we are the administration, there is no longer the board. You will notice on all the horizontal lines, those are the sections that we indicated. Your payment section, secondary benefits, appeal panel, appeal adjudication panel, verification or research, and our client care, who will receive the applications. Starting from top, an applicant will submit his application, will receive it, and then it will be captured and go through the process. From there, an application would move to the first stage, which is called the political verification and research. The researcher and verifier will screen the application, conduct his political verification, check what the political organizations, check what independent people they would have known about the service of the individual. Once they have done, they will summarize the findings of the research and submit to the adjudication panel. The adjudication panel will review the findings and recommendation of the research and verification, and then send their own recommendation to the chief adjudicator, who is the delegated authority to approve or reject cases. The chief adjudicator, when he approves, as you can see a line going down, application would immediately move to the payment section where a payment will be made. And then when it's rejected, the application will go back to our records management, and then a letter will be sent as a feedback to the applicant, who then, if he's not happy, he would send an appeal. That appeal will come to our client care through our records management. They'll pull the file. It moves to the appeal panel. Appeal panel, like Mr. Ngobizulu has indicated, is a unit within the administration. They will review the decision and draft a decision on behalf of the Special Pension Appeal Board. They don't make decisions. It's a support administrative function on behalf of the appeal board. They will draft a decision and submit all supporting documentation, and then only the board has a mandate to either approve or reject the case. And then once the appeal is approved, then it will move to payment section. When it's rejected, it will be sent to register, which is a final decision. It's a final internal appeal avenue. There is no other appeal. In the past, there was Section 7.2, whereby an applicant could dispute the decision of the review board. But this section has since been repealed by the 2008 Amendment Act. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Study and Kabela. Chairperson and honourable members, that the briefing to the committee from our side, we are ready to take any questions that are out of our presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and honourable members. Thank you, Honourable Chair. First and foremost, Honourable Chair, I'd like some clarity. Honourable Deputy Minister Makwetla announced that the database registration process is an open-ended process until the last military veteran will be signed up. And if that is a requirement that people also benefit in terms of the Act of 2011, then, of course, we have to question the Pensions Act if they have actually closed the doors. The second one is the SLAs. I hear that the department has verified certain death certificates and life certificates, they call it, with the Department of Home Affairs. What is the actual SLA between Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Military Veterans? Is an SLA? Do we know what the actual terms of the SLA is, that they have access to the database of Home Affairs? The other one is we need some clarity on the various pensions. I understand that I've been given some idea of what the NSF is about at 23,000. But certainly the numbers don't reconcile at all. The numbers here is 7,754 plus 23,000, which gives us 30,754, and we've got a total number of applications that has been approved at 22,000. And of course, later, if you look at the total, the 72,810, the numbers are not jelling. I'm not getting satisfaction, and if it is 72,000, I'd like to be categorized. Who are the actual military veterans? Who are the spouses? Who are the dependents? Whether it's a child, whether it's a sibling, or if it is a mother, or somebody that was financially and legally dependent on that particular military veteran. That we need clarity on as well. Then, of course, there are targets set in terms of the APP and the threat plan, which speaks about 2020 financial year 12-13, there will be 8,000 registered, and then it will be 2,000 per quarter, and then going ahead it will be 13,000, 15,000, 16,000, 17,000. Now if we add up all those figures, how many people do we have that have served in terms of the Act, full-time service in the liberation struggle, whether you have a special pension designed for? Now, the numbers also there, we have in the database of 57,000 that has been issued in 2005 by the department, which was used of late for the increase or the what we call cleanup of the database. There were 8,000 and their subsequent registration was 20,000. And amongst those, they were not all military veterans that actually signed up. In fact, we found that a number, when I visited these sites and when I made inquiries, a number of them were actually not military veterans from the liberation struggle, but from the SADF. So I would like to know, when we have 57,000 military veterans in the system, but we're sitting with so many applications, I cannot see my way through the statistics, who is actually the military veteran, who is the dependent, who is the spouse, I cannot see the figures, and it doesn't gel. So I think I need some clarity that I can see a flow of thought and this logic in the numbers, and that we reconcile numbers at the end, and we do not do an injustice to anybody that deserves to be paid. So I'd like the department to give us clarity on the various issues, and I'd like to also like to identify the pay points of the various pensions. Is the NSF the responsibility of the Department of Military Veterans? Is the GEPF the responsibility of the Department of Social Development? Who is responsible for what pension? Because we got a budget set aside of $1.6 billion over the MTF. Now, nothing of that budget was really paid out to the Military Veterans Department, but people have been receiving benefits. So who's actually responsible for it? And if it needs to be paid out, why is it not being transferred? Is it because the regulations have not been completed and we didn't have such a big deal? So we are sitting with money in the Treasury that is due to military veterans, and it cannot be disbursed because we didn't finish our work. Thank you.
No. Yes.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Member. Thank you, the Deputy Minister and officials for the presentation. I would like to know, or I think what I would like to know is this terminology on full-time in the liberation struggle. I mean, if I look at myself, caught up in 1976, went overseas in 1982, came back, and I was full-time in the struggle until the election, and I'm still full-time in the struggle to make sure we sort this out. So that definition is sort of like the liberation struggle, I understand, but the terminology of full-time is not clear to me. My second question is, what advertising is in place to inform people about this opportunity in the various provinces, and where are these offices? My third question is, what is the budget of the Treasury in terms of the NSF and the Special Pension Fund that you have now briefed us on? What is your budget? My fourth question is, are there any public reps, members of parliament, councillors, who are receiving these special funds? Are there any of them in the system as well? Do they qualify? My question number five is, why total number of 37 has been declined. I'd like to know what are the main causes of the decline, of them not being accepted. That's the questions I have for now. Thank you. Then I just wanted to clarify on that the board is no longer there. It's abolished. Yet in this diagram of structure that you showed us, you still refer to a board, an appeal board, although you said the appeal board is now the unit in the administration. So I understand there's an administration. Board is abolished, there's an administration, and there's a review board. So I just need the clarity on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think Honorable Dennis Joseph covered my questions. To know what is the relationship of this system to the Military Veterans Act. That's the first question. The second question is around the ages. We know that there are children who were born in exile in the 1985. Whom their parents either died in exile, and those parents were not able to claim for the benefits. And some who may today be 27 or 29, by the time they reach 30, the system is closed already. Or are we saying that the system always be open, available for people as they reach certain ages, or do we have a deadline that by this year this process will have closed those that are not benefiting, even if they qualify to get benefit, they will not benefit any longer because the system is no longer accommodating. The other part which I'm more interested about is on incomplete applications. I know that when I first saw this forms and for it was in 1993, and when I went through those forms, I concluded that form is complicated and I cannot fill it up myself. Then I went to the AG headquarters. It was told what exactly you are saying now, that people who qualify are people who were full-time in the struggle. And now it takes us back to the question that has just been raised now. Now, I want to put it before you to say exactly what do you mean when you say people who were full-time in the struggle, because in South Africa from 1973 to 1994, people who were involved in the struggle, some had employment and they were involved in the struggle in many forms on full-time basis when they were employed somewhere. Now, when you say full-time, are you referring to full-time as referred to people who were in exile, because those were the only people who did not require any income because their well-being were taken care of in exile, and those that were in prison? I think those are the only people that I can refer to as people who were full-time in the struggle, because they were in prison and the others were in exile. So there was no way that they could have been employed anywhere except those that were overseas. The other part on the forms, do we have a support office to assist members to fill in those forms? Are they still in the very same format as I've seen them in 1993, or have they changed, been refined to suit the ordinary person? Because if they are in the same format of their appearance in 1993, those forms were very difficult.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I begin on the latter, it does seem that Friday is the new Saturday of the ruling party. It is disappointed to see that we are joined by more of our colleagues. Chair, just two short questions. We are dealing with special pension, and I understand that the process from the description is there's a potential beneficiary. There's a process of what you call political verification, and the criteria broadly would be to determine whether a person was in the struggle and whether they were full-time. And that requires, I should imagine, a fairly complex investigation. What standard of evidence do you use to make that determination? Is it, for example, I'd be very intrigued to understand how you make that determination and what standard of evidence you use. I expect that it would need to be a set of affidavits. I would just be interested in that determination. The second question is the process at any point independently audited by, for example, the force check? You may look at a sample of approved beneficiary and look at whether, in fact, your unit has complied with the Act. So those two questions.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just one or two questions. The first one will be on special pension and the NSF. What happens here? If I was to give a practical example, the person was a government employee registered with the NSF, resigned, and got the pension according to the NSF. What happens? Does that person not qualify to the
social pension, or what happens in that case?
The second question would be on slide number 4, bullet point 2008, bullet point number 2. Extended survivors, surviving spouses and orphans, pension and funeral benefits to certain person. Who is this certain person? And well, the other question was on full time. I should think this is an indication. It would be interesting to know how you get the full time. Slide number 7. Orphans, you've got only 58. Are we actually saying the main beneficiaries are not dying, or what's happening? Maybe they are surviving. The last question would be on slide number 11. The appeals board consists of 3 members and was appointed by the Minister of Finance. The appointment, what does that mean, and what type of people did you advertise, or simply if he likes your face, appoints you, or what actually happens, and what is the criteria, what type of people are in this book? I think those would be my questions.
Deputy Minister, I don't know if your team will be comfortable that we just take this one rounds of questions, just combining all the questions and have the whole team noting them down. And then after the responses, you can see very much. So I thought we can just have one round of questions. Okay, Manzini, and then Honorable.
Thank you, sir. In fact, I'm prompted just to ask a question by the response, maybe the questions asked by Honorable Member Maini. I want to check here, when we say people who were full-time in the struggle, for example, in 1976, of which I was a student by then, and I was affected by then, but I never had the chance of, let's say, going abroad for maybe military training or whatsoever. There were people who were fighting from within South Africa, and they never went abroad. Then are those not also taken into consideration that, no, in fact, they were in the struggle? Because if it was not for them being inside and fighting inside the country, I don't think the struggle should have come to an end. So I want to check there. Maybe those only who have the privilege of going abroad, or forgetting about those who are inside the country. Thank you.
Yeah, Ali.
The verification process, up until now, we don't know how it is conducted. And for example, I have many members who have placed me as a referee, but I was never called. And their applications were rejected. And all their references, as we go around them, not even a single one of them was called. verify that person. Now, what method do we use? Do we use the method of getting into Google and see whether a person appears in Google, or what method exactly do we use?
Thank you, Honorable Monsieur. Like I said, Deputy Minister, let me just also reflect on your plate. The issue for me, Deputy Minister, is the disparities that existed once the special pension program was mooted. Because the presentation that we received a number of years ago with respect to the benefits that accrued to members of the SADF in relation to members of the non-statutory the disparities were quite huge. Now, we're ending up right now with a situation in which special pension is not able to be the type of leverage that can be able to bring comfort to members of the non-statutory. So my question is, with respect to those disparities that have occurred, is Treasury looking at another mechanism in order to assist and intervene on behalf of those who are getting special attention? We have figures of the amounts that accrue to members of the SAP. A huge disparity, very huge difference. My second question is, with respect to the different benefits, the special pension as against the NSF. Now, members of the special pension are getting this allowance, this pension, in terms of the number of years that they have served, your 5 years, your 10 years, your 15 years, and so on. And with respect to the NSF, I want to understand, because on page 8, like my colleague said, you are talking of a plus minus 23,000, which have reverted to NSF instead of special pension. Notwithstanding what has been said about the 1.6 billion that is available for the relief generally of military veterans. But the problem is the main focus of that particular amount, that it is earmarked towards the NSF and not members who have benefited from special pension. So my problem is the differences in terms of the quantum, the amount of money allocated to special pension and the amount of this money. And we really want the Treasury to look at this issue very seriously, because we are mindful of the fact that the very same special pension is being kept. And we raise the issue of tax a number of times. And we understand that South Africa has to conform to any income tax. But again, our appeal is that this is a special dispensation. It's not like an ordinary income, but it is derived from certain special circumstances. So why subject it? And we also provided the argument to Treasury with respect to the oversight trade in Algeria, where the Algerians are saying, if you have performed a full-time service of 10 years, it becomes times 2, and then it becomes 20 years. So that when they tax it, the tax implications does not affect the beneficiary. That is the Algerian model. Now, we just appeal to Treasury to be innovative with respect to the issue of tax in the context of solving. But lastly, Deputy Minister and the team, I've been conducting a workshop in my constituency about special pension, and there's a problem of children who are at risk. I hope those copies have been made available to Treasury. Maybe it's something that I can take as a little face with the officials. But the bottom line is that the very special pension personnel are able to pass a case against the children at the expense of a spouse that has been divorced by the victim. This case is closer, you know, very emotive in a sense. The very disease we were together in 2019, and you have children, and those children have not benefited. But the ex-wife who has been divorced has actually benefited. So all I'm saying is, in terms of the legislation, you are saying the spouse, and then you are also saying the children. But at what point are you saying both the children and the spouse shall have? Because if you say the spouse at the expense of the children, the act does not in this instance satisfy the need for those beneficiaries. Thank you. Over to you.
I'm seeing your face, Dr. Jefferson. Thank you very much. As usual, I'm going to leave the very difficult ones to the officials. I will deal with the more general and the easier questions. Chair, as I indicated in my brief opening remarks, that should be alive to the fact that the special pension only addresses a particular plight of the intended category of persons who played a role in bringing about the democratic order. I also indicated that our government is addressing some of the other issues with other interventions other than the special pensions, because the special pensions, if I may go back to the object, we only quote at the beginning there, we summarize the first part with the understanding that members have the legislation. let me repeat. Part one, with regards to the right to attention in the legislation, says that a qualified person is a person who makes sacrifices or serves the public interest in establishing a non-racial democratic constitutional order and who is a citizen or is entitled to be a citizen of the Republic of South Africa. Has the right to attention in terms of this act is that person. This is what we put in the two for granted that members will have that. Either at the back of their mind or in the front of them. One who was prevented from providing for a pension because for a total or combined period of at least 5 years prior to the 2nd of February 1990, that is now the advent of our democracy. One or more of the following circumstances apply. Then it leaves the circumstances. That person must have been engaged in full-time in the services of a political organization. Full-time in the service of a political organization can only be verified by the organization. So it's not a complex complex process. It is the organization that can verify that this person was in full-time service of this organization. Two, he must have been prevented, that person must have been prevented from leaving a particular place or area within the Republic or from being at a particular place or in particular area within the Republic as a result of an order issued in terms of a law mentioned in Schedule 1-3 of this Act. I'm actually dealing with the qualification, but I was dealing with the matter also where you said it's not complex establishing the full-time service of the person. I was saying the only verification for full-time service is from the person's political organization. So your political organization says you were full-time. Even if you were not full-time, you will find that there are cases where we have found that some political organizations have said people were full-time, only to discover that those persons were in the employ either of the state or anything else. And those are the people that have actually, some of them have been trying to control, because that is actually the control of the state. Because it's here, it also you need to question it as well. If you were in employment, employed by the state, it means you were not prevented from providing for protection. Because this is the category of persons. So if you were able to be employed, you might have been serving an organization like many of us, but if you are in the employ of any employer and being able to provide for a pension, this is not the vehicle for addressing.
That clarification is the first question. I would have very interested in being with this.
No. It includes these 50s because they were employed. But also, some of them were not in business, were just employed. So if you were employed, then you were not prevented from providing for pension. This is why I wanted us to focus on why do we call this a special pension? Because it addresses a particular exclusion. Because people for other exclusions, and this is why they're going to come to the issue of the benefits and risks as well. Because these are different regimes and situations altogether. And the NSF as well, which also recognizes that even though you were not in the employ, now that you are in the employ, because you served in a non-statutory force, you are now brought on board, and your service in your MK, in your APLA, in your other non-statutory forces, that service is also recognized. That's where the NSF comes in. But the special pension, you may not be in the military army of your organization, but served your organization. And that is why there is always a confusion between the benefits that the Military Veterans Act addresses and the one that is addressed by the special pension. Special pension does not only address the military veterans, but it addresses everyone that fits the criteria that I am trying to go through. And the third criteria, the category, is that a person must have been imprisoned, if a person must have been imprisoned or detained in terms of any law for any crime mentioned in Chapter 1 of this Act, that a person is imprisoned for any offense committed with a political object. That is found in the definition of the legislation. There are a number of legislation which many of you have passed were subjected to, which is the qualify. For that, there are records in the state record. And as I've said, there are people who are disqualified. Some of them have been qualified because of the verification that the minister talked about. When this is audited, some people are found to have benefited unlawfully and in a corrupt manner, and those people have been removed. In fact, 2 years ago, with the Auditor General, was because paying those people, which means there was a failure in our process to identify those people should not be paid, was actually classified as a regular expenditure. And we were penalized for that as the department for having paid them. So the process is audited, yes, and when it is audited, we actually do get the result of the test for the parliamentary committees like all departments. So it is, and that is the part that I would say is a complex one, and that is why when it comes to the review board at that time, and when it comes to the appeals board at that time, the only skill that is required is somebody who understands the law, because it is to check that when in applying the law, because the law is before the people, even if that person is not politically friendly, if the person is able to see when in applying the law, did you really apply the spirit of the law accurately? So the question with regards to the closing, so there is a difference between the ministry, honourable member, there is a difference between the ministry that says the benefits and education. The closing dates are written into this law because it addresses in particular only the particular of the exclusion from being able to provide for exemption. And that is not an unlimited exclusion. Because there is a time when we are all able to provide for a pension now. We cannot continue to say those people still qualify for pension. This dispensation was to say, during that time people were not able to provide for a pension. Now they are able to provide for a pension. They now just fall into the category of the unemployed, like everybody else. So when we fall into that category, we should then be looking at what are the benefits for the unemployed people at a given time. The pay points, you know, at the end of the day, all pensions will be dealt with at one pay point with the government employees' pension administration. And that is where we are. But calling it to the service, because those people fall within the department of because there are some of the people that fall within the department of defense. And that is why, after passing the latest NSF, that allocation addresses a particular category, and the various departments are also allocated to address that in their budget. So, being full time in the struggle, I want to repeat that into your political organization that can verify your full time service. So, you might have been in your organization. Since if your organization proves that you were rendering full time service to your organization, we accept the word of your organization. And I have said in the past when we met here that if we had an army of 70,000, I don't think it would have taken that long. And that is why we have, out of the 70,000 people that have died, only 30,000 people have died, because the rest of the people advertising, mainly with the political parties at the beginning of the process, letters were written to all political parties to request the political parties make it their responsibility to reach out to its members that they know have that they meet the criteria. Other than that, in the past few years, realizing that despite that attempt, there were still people who were not able to access the information. We had a number of roadshows. We went out to try, and I was actually part of it myself. We were subjected to a lot of pain and torture, and in some instances held hostage because of people giving us because we are categories that are qualified, therefore we must not leave the venue until we have acceded to the request that they also made. Because the person wants to, I understand the type of some of them, but the person went into the hall and showed you where he was shot by the participant. As a result of that, he feels he's entitled to a special pension. But again, as I said, the special pension was for a particular area of the exclusion. Public representatives are still being, yes, there are public, they are not excluded, public representatives are not excluded. Perhaps in this room, there are excluded points for public representatives. He complained about people not being able to be himself. But yes, there are public representatives, they are not excluded. So the 37, the 35, they are for a number of reasons. Partly because they didn't meet the criteria. A lot of people, when you open the doors, some people thought this was just a grant for everybody that ever threw a stone at the Medagallo should be paid. And those are some kinds of applications that we got. People did apply. And rightfully, they did not do the criteria because the officials were supposed to implement the legislation as it stands. The issue of the board, we did explain that it is the pension, the special pensions board and the review board that were also abolished because in terms of the act, they were supposed to perform a particular function, political function. And when once we have completed that function, when we no longer have applications to verify that those two boards didn't have a role to play. Now the board that we have, and that now is within the administration, and the board that we have now is an appeals board, which I said must understand legislation. The criteria is very clear. The board, the minister point of the question by the market, whether if you are well shaped or not. there is a clear criteria of your legal expertise and your understanding of the South African political environment. But the most important thing is to see whether, when they receive appeal, those people, their applications will process in terms of the law. That's the most important thing. That's the understanding of the point.
The actual question was, do you
Yes, there are adverts, but also not only adverts, we also have handled all sorts of recruiting, legal recruiting channels in order to get the what normally becomes a bit of a challenge is because we are not in the mainstream justice area, people have better benefits elsewhere. You would then find that people that have either retired but with very good skills, it's not easy to get a person of a senior counsel in that way, but that's the type of pursuit that we're talking about. But there are others and also and all other companies and then the English process that we can go through which can be scrutinized to show the quality of the The children born in exile, as the honourable member understands, that it is children born in exile, but who came back in the qualification, typical qualifying would indicate that dependents can apply if the parents have passed on their parents meet the criteria and the dependents do meet the criteria of being dependent, and those that are still young. And I think that also goes to the question with regards to the PTA often as to what has happened to the rest of them. We recall that we have this is Zubati Aiki often an appeal to the people. I want to point that down into the age. So when they reach that age, as you would recall, they are actually going to end up without offense altogether because as people reach the open age, and now we only have to find dependents who will end when the parents have passed on. But the offense actually it's a decreasing number of people who will end up because as the time progresses, people reach a certain age and they are no longer classified as offense in terms of incomplete applications, 1993, I think you were just a year ahead of the Social Pension Act, which was passed in 1996. So from 1996, and I think the form has been simplified from time to time, but offices are there, and offices do run out. I would also want to appeal to honorable members that they also open their constituency offices to assist people to complete the form. And some of the constituency offices have actually been very useful, even during our roadshows. We actually found some constituency offices that themselves have invited us, and they would assist people to complete the forms. The issue of an independent auditor, I think I've dealt with, and we have to deal with the special pension versus the NSS, you guys are approach an area. And the budget, you will have to deal with that. It's something that you guys have to be aware of as well. I think I've ended my part. The issue of the rep, Honorable Madia, if you were a rep and you were not called, you'd recall that there are a number of other criteria that need to be satisfied. If you're, maybe it would be useful if you have those things, you just look at them so that you can be advised as to what was needed for rejection. The reason, the person might, there might have not been a reason to call the rep because you met the first criteria of being full-time in the organization, but did not meet the other criteria. Therefore, there was no reason to call you because that was contract. But then the other criteria with regards to the person's qualification might have been what disqualified the applicant. Disparities with members of the SADF, SANDF, with NSF, and that is why you have seen people moving from the social pension, because we were trying to align the two. But I must say, Chairperson, this is a matter that needs to receive our attention, because but at the end of the day, it's a matter that Parliament would actually be pronounced on, because at the end of the day, Special Pensions Administration is moving here with the implementation of legislation that we have passed. And we have seen this piece of legislation has been amended so many times, because as well it is obvious that there are areas that need to be addressed, those areas are addressed as long as they are within the confines of what the special pension is to address. But those disparities are part of what I would imagine when Parliament considers amendments, we should actually be in attention to them, including some of the people that have been excluded because of their applications and also something that the Parliament is actually to assist them in recommending to the authorities that the consideration to come for Parliament and the Council, etc. Including the taxation also of special pensions, the matter that we have found to be needing receiving attention, but as the legislation says at the moment, it has to be implemented as it says. The matter that also another position refers to of the children that are aggrieved, I have had sight of the letter which was posted recently. We will be responding accordingly, and I would because there is a dispute with the families, and people will be able to provide evidence. This is on the basis of the evidence provided that the payments are made, but we are quite happy to engage with the office officials who have been discharged. I'm presently also to assist in facilitating the discussion to allow a comprehensive response.
Thank you.
inflationary pressures on the pension, the increase and decrease in membership. We look at spouse pensions, dependents, etc. All of this information is verified and recommended by actuaries to the Minister of Finance and are factored into the budget for special pensions. Also, for the next 20 year period, we estimate a 4.6% increase in the special pension budget. On NSF, in terms of the current 5% refund, the actuaries are informed in estimating the total amount. But for this side of the financial year, Treasury has budgeted 200 million rand as a transfer to the GPS. Now, the entire process of payment and accreditation, etc., for those who qualify for NSF, is handled by a special unit within the Government Pension Administration Agency in conjunction with the GEPF fund. And as I'm saying, the current budget, which will be transferred to the GPS, is estimated at about 200 million. Home Affairs, as members would know, Home Affairs is the custodian for life and death in our country. And we felt, in order to alleviate the tedious nature of a physical verification of life and death that we had previously, where we send a form to a person, the person is fulfilling the form, goes to the police or to the agency for certification, and having a whole range of other attachments like your ID copy and your bank details, your address, etc. We felt that it would be best. And then that person has to submit all of, all that information within 3 months. And if you miss the 3 months, you normally will suspend your pension. And in order to alleviate all of those tedious measures, we felt it would be best to link with Home Affairs on an auto-life verification system. We have integrated our database, payment annuity database, with Home Affairs, and for now it is working well. For those members who are overseas, we still use the physical verification and give them a time frame of 3 months to return all the funds that are needed. I think that's...
That actually took off a load from a lot of members of the pension, not only the special pension, who had to do the life certificates on an annual basis, who now no longer have to do that as long as they are active. But as Kabelo said, that those that were not active at the time of moving into that system will still have to first finish proof of being alive before they can be part of the new innovation system. It has helped a great deal. A lot of the elderly people with their pets to be taken to the nearest commission of oaths and all sorts of things. That doesn't have to happen anymore. Until the person, and as soon as the person passes on, immediately that person is removed from the system because of the new and all the pensions.
Can I just find out then if the person has passed on, then do we immediately start contacting the dependents or do we wait for them to, because it will be in our system already?
Thank you, Chief. When a pensioner dies or passes on, the system, because it interfaces with Home Affairs. Remember now, in terms of the Special Pension Act, the Act is very clear that the responsibility lies with the family to report death at Home Affairs or the Special Pension Administration so that we don't end up paying a deceased case. But when the system picks up a death case before the family tells us, there won't be any payout that goes. We will wait for the family to come and claim. At times, because the system has it's in sequence. It updates, I think Ramon is every second week. If the family comes, let's say somebody comes on today and the family comes before that update starts, we will manually stop the system to address all. There was a question regarding children of the deceased. Do they still have opportunity? Can they still apply? The Act is very clear. It gives provision for after death, today, the family has 36 months in which they can apply, which means 3 years. If that 3 years lapse before they make submission, it will be a late application. The administration cannot consider that because the Act is very clear. There's Auditor General who would say, but how did you pay this case because it falls under the 36 months? So it's open only for 36 months. I would link this question to the question that was raised around late benefits and to say certain people, what it meant by certain people, because it linked to this particular one. If we recall when the Deputy Minister was presenting in terms of the Act, how it started and the amendments and so on, the Act, when it said in 2005, the Act introduced benefits to certain people. Certain people, it's very clear. In the past, before the 2005 amendment, spouses were only allowed a once-off lump sum. There was no monthly spouse pension. So certain people, it refers to people that have benefited previously, like the spouses that have received a once-off lump sum. 2005 Amendment Act was saying now, spouses can come and apply for the monthly spouse benefit. Orphans can come and apply for a monthly orphans benefit. But on the orphan side, or children, they are only paid up until the age of 18, which this will address the question around the 58 orphans. And then between the age of 18 and 23, a child or an orphan will have to submit information annually that he is still a full-time student. Is a requirement by the Act. At the age, when he turns 23, the system will automatically stop the monthly orphans or child's pension. We don't pay beyond the 23. However, if by the time of death of the pensioner, we have an orphan that was suffering from a permanent disability, that particular child will be paid until death. Only persons that are suffering, dependents that are suffering from total or permanent disability, the cutoff, it's not applicable there. And then,
are you saying that those spouses that got lump sums can still apply again?
Okay.
And again, when you say terminally ill. Even those that are mentally retarded fall under that category.
Okay. Those spouses that received lump sum, the window period, the 2005 Amendment Act, as you can see, the new benefits are introduced. Monthly spouse benefit pension, monthly orphan pension, and funeral benefit. And it set the closing date. 31 December 2006. Now, all those spouses that benefited in the past received lump sum around that particular time, they had up until 31 December to submit. And those that did not submit by that particular date were rejected. However, the 2008 Amendment Act, as you can see, under 2008 benefits, the bullet 2, extend surviving spouse and orphans pension and funeral benefit to certain people, those that could not meet the deadline there. The 2008 also extended for them to come back and say, here's an opportunity for you, you could not meet the deadline, now you can apply. However, 2008 amendment also set a deadline of for the spouses, 12 January 2012. So those who did not again submit by 12 January 2012, they fall outside in terms of Section 6G, 1 subsection B.
So if a person receives person allowed to apply for a mantra.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. It was a second window period. It was allowed. But now, and going forward, it gives, we need to take cognizance, going forward, it gives, the person dies today, it gives 3 years going forward. So those ones, it doesn't apply anymore. And then you can see why we have a small number of coffins there. If you compare previous, you see there were 300, they reduced, because even when they reach 23, they come off the system. And then we have coffins again that applies when they are over the age of 23. They only receive one lump sum because they are already over, depending on coffins, they are already over the age of 23. I just hope if there is an amendment, we will consider. I think DM has dealt with the full-time issue. And then research. There is, like the Deputy Minister has indicated, that reliance is on the political organization to support. However, the administration does not take the verification by the political organization at face value. We still do further research. I will indicate our research. Our research focuses on an applicant would say, I was involved, I was arrested, I was imprisoned, or would say, I was involved, I left the country at a particular year, I left the country. He would say, I was banished, or I was restricted. We go further and research these things. We've got a secondary data that we've collected in the past through various organs. Your Department of Justice with convictions and everything for all these. We've got a list of any of the states in the past. We check them on this list. Through correctional service, we check the prison records as well. And also with SAPS. Some people use this opportunity to claim for special pension because he met some of the political convictions in jail, and he will try to say, no, 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 they like this name dropping. I was worth so-and-so, so-and-so, a well-known politician. But what we do, through SAPS, we check and we get records through the database of criminal records, and it will tell you what was the conviction, what was the charge about. That's how we use it. And then we also use ITC. ITC, we use it to check previous employment records. Because once this person prevented for providing for their own pension, and we've caught a lot of them on ITC, we also check, we've got an arrangement, a management arrangement with the Department of Labor, where they check in for us the UIF. A person was employed, you would have provided, you would have contributed to UIF. Then we get there to say, but you said you were full-time and you did this, but Department of Labor has indicated that your employment is poor net for the same period that you claim in full-time service on. And then we, some of the questions when we engage the applicant.
Can I just disturb you again? Okay, you keep on calling it a criminal record. It's not a criminal record. They were not criminal. So besides that, I'm still interested on this special agent or this individual. It will definitely show that this person was employed by the police. Even if he was outside in Elsa. So that person doesn't qualify. I want to satisfy myself.
Okay. We have cases where applicant made a submission. Genuinely he was in exile. He was in the camps of the non-statutory force, Angola or anywhere. We managed to pick up that he was contributing to pension, government pension. And our system tells us that this person was employed as he was an SAPS member. We have such cases.
Can we have that list?
No.
It doesn't show as an SAPS employee.
However, when we reject such cases, we used to reject them in terms of Section 1 of the Special Pension Act, because it stated clearly that a person person who undermined efforts of the establishment of a good cause, it falls under the category which I'm not going to say the name that you're referring to. Okay. I've mentioned correctional service. Some of the questions that we pose at the applicants is around, especially on the under 35, when did you finish school? And we went further to certain schools where the principal, if he's still alive, they will make an affidavit that, no, you attended school from this day to this day. You need to notice full time. No one is disputing that they contributed to the establishment of a good group. However, if you was a student, you was involved in the student politics, the question is, was that particular person prevented from providing for a pension? That person couldn't have because he was a full-time scholar or student. Those are the kind of research protocols that we've put to address bogus applications. The issue around AG has been addressed. We have AG and internal audit. There's internal audit that comes, they do a sample and pull cases. If they pick up certain, then they'll go further. You may recall that DMS alluded to some of the cases that we picked up where we've laid charges for fraudulent submission or benefiting. NSF, SIU was also did that, yes, thank you, honorable member. And then the, I think that's touched on that. Okay. From my side, the issue is the steps. The issue is the steps. Can you go?
No,
the last one is the steps.
NSF is at the certification.
I think there's a step issue. The NSF part on the steps. The 23,000. I think that's the issue.
Not the different.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. You mean in terms of qualification? Okay, I'll address that. The NSF and special pension, the question was that a person who is in is a government employee who has opted for NSF, when he leaves government, is he eligible for special pension? The answer is no. The answer is no. Section 30A of the GEP law, not special pension, of the GEP law, when he opted for NSF, his service as a non-statutory force was recognized by the GEP law, which means now your service, when you're a government employee, then you continue to contribute on that particular service, it's being recognized. When you exit the service, you are also exiting with the service. So if that person is in special pension, it's double dipping.
The reason for the NSF was to try to level the playing field between the former combatants who joined, who got integrated into the state authorities with the service that they served in either the military forces but outside of government prior to the liberation, to then recognize those years and then include them. Recall that initially it's only government's contribution that would be accommodated. We now have passed the latest amendment that Grisa was referring to, which then says that government also accommodates or it compensates for the portion that you were supposed to have contributed, the 5% that Grisa was referring to, in order to level the playing field for government to do its own contribution, but also to meet you with your own contribution that you would have made, because that placed a lot of people into distress, having to try and buy back and or end up with a service that is not entirely equivalent to the other people that have been. So that has now been addressed. That was the purpose of the NSF, to try and level the playing field between people and recognize the service that otherwise served in the non-statutory process and want.
Thanks, Minister. The issue around the steps, honourable members, I'd like us to focus on this particular one so that there's a clear understanding when we leave. NSF special pension are two separate dispensations. The number plus minus 23,000, you can see it's not in a bullet form, it's not covered on those numbers there. NSF, it administers within the Government Pension Administration Agency, same as special pension. So the plus minus 23,000. However, the plus minus 23,000, there are some of the plus minus 23,000, if not a chunk, included in the 72810. Why? When special pension was introduced in 1996, it only made provision for people that were 35 and above by 1st December 1996, which means people that were born 1st December 1961 back, 61, 60 back, 1st December 1961 back. Now, a lot of under 35, they still need submission even though the Act was focusing in a specific age category. That is why if you look at the total declined application, we have a lot of numbers there. Majority of the 37 is under 35 then. Majority of them. And then, again, now on the approved, another question was, why are you only paying 7,700 monthly, whereas you've got 22,307? Most of the applicants in there, some of them, they were approved, receiving special pension, but they opted for NSF, and then their special pension ceased. Some of the people that were received in the 22,307 is spouses that received once off, and some of them is a dependent that were over the age of 23 that received once off, and some is spouses or children that have applied on behalf of the deceased. Remember, when people came back from prison and came back from exile, not everyone came back. There are other people that died while in a mission in exile. Family had an opportunity to apply there. The number is more because if it's five children, it's counted as one. One application, because we pay that particular person. That's why we've got a huge number and then a lesser number to the monthly recipient.
Question. I would ask the official honorable members, I'm saying we have to round out because
okay.
I thought we would give honorable Mugumi just 15 minutes to do a military veterans act. But because we are late, we might have to reissue and then look at that other aspect a little bit later. Because the most important thing is those who are captured within the system of special pension, how are they going to benefit in the Military Veterans Act? Because the Military Veterans Act is precisely passed in order to alleviate the plight of this. So it will be another leg of us engaging in that issue. So because of time, we might not have to do it today. We may have to raise the honorable member, James, and then... yeah. Manu, we are the third.
Can I appreciate the honorable chair? My question. Now, I just want clarity on the Home Affairs where the department is using Home Affairs. We know there was a long track record of Home Affairs in terms of ghost pensioners, ghost teachers, you know, all those things. And we know that the previous minister has done quite a bit to bring Home Affairs back to a system where we could believe in it. And I'm saying this against this new company that was appointed now this month in dealing with the senior citizens and the pensioners who had to be carried out painfully, who had to be carried out of bed to physically console themselves at the pension points. So are we satisfied that the data in terms of what is with Home Affairs is good enough that we, that the department have made the decision not to allow people physically to go to police station, but to use the data of Home Affairs in terms of whether they are deceased or not. I think, and then I wanted to ask, is the department managing this data and the administration thereof and the payouts as a department, unlike other pensioners where it's outsourced, you know, in terms of the investment and the payment and the administration? So I just wanted clarity on that as well. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question and then a brief comment. I come back to this question of political verification. My understanding is that the first step would be for a political organization to provide an undertaking that a member was involved full-time in the struggle. Is it fair to infer then that on the applicant, that at least a high proportion of the applications that were declined, in this case nearly 38,000, that political organizations provided your department with false information and possibly deliberately so? And my question is, who in those political organizations provides the information? Will it be the Secretary General, for example, or somebody else? Because it would seem that it would be reasonable to infer that in almost 37,000 cases, a political organization provided you, or possibly provided you, with false information. That's the question. And then just two brief comments. I hope that the DG of Military Veterans and the entire...
Can I protest the question? That question is irrelevant. What is important is you could pick it up. What happened along the way, nobody's business. The fact that whatever happened, they managed to pick it up. That means whether the Secretary General approved or whoever, it's neither here nor there. That is a political question. We are dealing with what they are doing, and they are managing okay. That is what we are busy with here. So you're going to have to answer that. Thank you.
Chair, if I could indeed that the chairman is not trying to protect the department, he seems to be trying to protect the particular political organization. Nevertheless, I'd also just like to apologize to the Deputy Minister for stepping out to an urgent report. I'm sorry that I was out the room. It had nothing to do, of course, with my alleged deep problem.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Honourable Chair, I'd like to request from the department that I still want a reconciled statistic of the various pensions, because even in the report prepared for us, references made the estimated cost of benefits to military veterans. Now, we are very clear that we understand special pensions are taken for a certain category of people. Now, they are all military veterans because they were in the struggle. Now, the issue is in terms of the military veterans act and, of course, what we have a budget for. I see there in front of me cash flow for the first year, 104 million. And of course, 106 million, 108 million, 110, 112, and we have an initial cost of 1.8 billion in terms of the information that we have available. So I'm saying that I would like to see that there's 400 million indicated now by the department that is paying out for special pensions and with increases of 4.6 over the MTF. Now, I cannot sit with pieces of information, I cannot see it in front of me because it's not contained only in the budget of the military veterans. I'd like the department to appraise us, to put it on the paper for us, the categories of all the pensions, the cost attached to it, and of course, how many people qualify, because the figure still up till now, even with the explanation given, it's not correct. It does not tally up. So I'd like the department to prepare a page for us so that we can see. And I think the question raised by Honorable Maki is, if there are disparities, given the total, how much people give the parity in pensions? What do they receive when they get a special pension? What do they receive when they get an NSF pension? We want to know the disparities. And the old war veterans pension and the injury on service, they get all these costs. What are the parities? Because I think that is the bottom line. Are people being treated fairly and equally? So I think I'm not asking it now. I'm asking going ahead. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, honorable members, I think that was the last round of questions. So can we give the department the latitude to respond, and then with those make comments, and then we'll see how to reach it with the next meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. I must say the Home Affairs, the use of the Home Affairs system has actually, as I said earlier, proved to actually to have come with tremendous efficiency benefits. But also, it is not that people are now not allowed to present themselves if they find that they have been unfairly declared dead once they are alive, because they just have to show themselves. But we haven't received such But we know that in the past there were people that were prevented from voting in 2004 because they were already appearing on the CDs of the voting board. But we actually haven't picked that up in our yet. You can imagine that anybody that was pensioned and thanks, Jefferson, for taking us from political questions, but I was tempted to respond to you, but with your direction, not yet on behalf of a particular political party, but I will. The reconciled steps, I would imagine it would be useful just to demystify and deal with the issue of the confusion, because it is not correct that all beneficiaries of special pension are. They are not. So I think that's where the confusion actually starts. But I think we should do that, working with the Department of Defense and the Introduction, we should be in a position to provide for who qualifies them, who are in the NFM, who are in the special pension, who is it better. It's a pity, you know, it's like in a funeral where people have a long list of people, and when the pastor has to do the funeral service, he shows that our child has the child. The position in which you post the pastor, I feel very bad that you think they would have actually had to say. We will provide the statistics so that at least when next we come, we are able to talk to different components of this competition with the relevant
In terms of other databases that we are going to hook with for verification purposes, we are looking at Fabric, we are looking at Rika, and various other databases that are credible for us to be able to do checks and balances. Payments of pension for special pensions and all other pensions that are administered within the Government Pension Administration Agency are paid by the administration agency, so it's not outsourced. And therefore, the entire amount, which is about 30 billion rand in total, are paid through the department itself, and it stays into account. We're also using off-account payments as well through the post office, etc. For those people, some of whom are in rural areas and that we cannot reach through bank account details. So those options are also available, but the department is managing the payment process and the payment system.
Well, thanks very much indeed. Honorable members, some of the issues that the ministry has raised to
committee are those issues that the committee might have to take up with the finance committee or so. The issue of late applications for MTA, I mean for military veterans, 36 years, taxation of special pension, and the disparities between the SAPF and the non-specialized forces. Those are some of the issues. Maybe the last one could be the benefits of full-time students up to the age of 23, if a student studies up to the age of 24. Depending. So long as they are full time students, for sure. So those are some of the things I do. Honorable members, thank you very much.